Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, David Slack.
Morena, Rosetta Millie.
Hi, David. How you going?
I've had a big week. I've just come back from Masterton, where my dad yesterday turned 100 years old.
Whoa. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Good on him.
He's the first 100-year-old I know.
Aww. How cool. Did he have a good birthday?
He had a splendid birthday. He lives in a home, as you might imagine, and everybody was lovely to him, and one of the carers there had got her uncle to carve this medic for him, and he's always admiring her art, the artwork on her arms, so she got some transfers and put them on his so that he was all tatted up for the big day.
That's so cute. Oh, awesome. Yeah. And Masterton is lovely. Have you ever been out to Riversdale Beach?
A few times.
Yeah, beautiful way.
It's a special place. There's something about the East Coast, the whole sky looks different because you look out that way, it's all the way to South America.
Mm.
It's a big open place.
Mm.
Very cool.
Awesome. Today we're talking a little bit about supermarket monopolies and what's to be done about this issue, eh?
Yes, and what I thought might be worth recalling was where we've gone this way before successfully, because usually we don't seem to be able to succeed. We're kind of a country where we're just not quite big enough for things to get past a cosy monopoly or duopoly, and that's certainly the case with our supermarkets. And it was once the case with our telephone system, or actually to go even further back, we just had the state running the whole thing, and it was extremely inefficient in the end, and that became a kind of emblem for a whole lot of the 80s reforms that said, well, if things are efficient, then you must assume that the government can't run anything and we've got to let the market do it instead. And that's both right and quite wrong, in the sense that, you know, you can have the state run things better, you just have to have better systems doing it. However, that's the way we went with competition and the free market in all kinds of ways. And to some extent, it did make sense to make the phone system into something else. And what we ended up with was Telecom, which was essentially the old post office, turned into something very corporatized and paying its its senior executives an awful lot of money, because then it would look like the free market and it was going to be very good. But what it really meant was that it had a marvelous monopoly it could exploit the better to pay those executives handsomely, and we were still paying a hell of a lot for our toll calls and buying our phones and using our phones. And along comes the Minister for Telecommunications, David Cunliffe, in 2006, and looking at the whole thing and saying, this is not nearly competitive enough. Sorry, I'm leaving one bit out. By that, you did have new other players coming into the market, chiefly what we know as today as One New Zealand, which sort of reaches back through Vodafone, through Bell South, through a bunch of different incarnations. But it was still that problem of a duopoly, and the poor old consumer comes out not very well off, because the competition's just not there. So what David Cunliffe said was, I'm going to really, really shake this up. I'm going to force separation on Telecom, and because they essentially own the pipes and the every other level of the market, we're going to take the network system off them and make that something else, which we know today as Chorus.
Yes.
And we're going to let everybody else buy from that. And we don't need to get into the technicalities of it. The principal point was that he busted it up enough that you could have proper competition. Now, the reason I go through all of that history is just to show that it has been possible before to take something that everybody looked at and said, there's no way you can make this more competitive. That's just how things are. We pay way less comparatively than we used to for our phone services, and we get a lot more for it. The same argument, I would say, you can make for supermarkets. What we have essentially is a cosy duopoly, and they get to make them go to the suppliers and push them hard for a good deal, and then they sell it to us, having got it for a very good price. Don't sell it to us for the very good price, and they take a very nice, handsome profit through the on the way through. Now, you can dispute just how much of a profit that is, and they certainly do, but...
Yeah, they love doing that, eh? We're not making that much money, we promise.
Yeah. That's the best we can do.
I know, yeah. Haven't we given enough?
But, you know, you don't have to tell anybody what it feels like to go through the supermarket goddamn checkout at the moment.
These days, it's punishing.
Yeah. Now, there are a few wrinkles to this. For instance, if you go to some of the interesting Asian supermarkets now, you can get some great deals on some great things, but not consistently and not in a way that leaves you thinking, well, if I could just go down to the local supermarket and have the kind of keen pricing that you might find at, for instance, Lidl or any of the UK chains, you'll get the clear impression there that competition makes it that bit keener. And, you know, you can overstate this too. The cost of things is kind of scary wherever you go in the world. And there is one other thing we do always have to recognise with New Zealand being the last bus stop on the planet. The cost of freighting things here is substantial, and so totally. You know, that does have a bearing on things too. Mm. But all the same, you really do get the feeling that if you could do to the supermarket arrangement what David Cunliffe did to the telcos, you might get somewhere. But what we've got is Nicola Willis, who is, you know, timid in such things, and you've got Stephen Joyce, the eminence grease of the National Party, recently appointed as chairman of Foodstuffs North Island. So you can just see how...
Bit of a conflict of interest, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's certainly the matocracy that looms large over so much business here in New Zealand, because, you know, in so many ways we're little and we rattle.
Yeah.
And so it's not hard for somebody who is in one corner of the economy to be mates with somebody who's in another corner, and there's a sort of an understanding. Oh, don't be too hard on us, will you, Nicola? No, Stephen, wouldn't do drink it, but we'll see what we can get out of this Commerce Commission, but we'll also have a look at it and decide how reasonable or not that is before we turn anything into legislation. That's your problem. You've got to have a minister like Cunliffe who is prepared to look at it and say, no, bugger it, we're going to go gangbusters on this, and we're not going to worry who gets upset about it.
So Nicola Willis has said she's considering forced divestiture but is sort of tentative about it, you think. What's happening in the opposition? Are we seeing policy come out considering this?
Well, we've had noises about it, but it is fair enough to say that you don't necessarily announce all of your policy too far out in an election. You wait to see exactly what it is you're dealing with, and then you announce it. But it is, and we've talked about this before, it is the case that we've got a fairly centre-leaning Labour Party at the moment, that way, as we have had for quite some time. You've got a Greens wing to the left in our arrangements, and TDM that will be more bold. And that's probably where you need to look. You know, if you can get a strong commitment on from Greens or TDM that would then... hold sway in a coalition agreement. It's probably when you're most likely to get the big hit. But, you know, like I just said, it was David Cunliffe who was a Labour cabinet minister who did that. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they might decide to be more bold. And, you know, there's a lot of argument that says they need to be bolder than they are. It wouldn't harm them electorally if they were. And, you know, we've talked about this before too, that, you know, that it is hard to get too much to maintain your political traction if you seem to be too energetic. There is an innate caution in regular New Zealand, middle New Zealand, whatever you want to call it, that is not that excited about change, gets very leery of change. And so you have to be very skillful in how you take people along with it. But again, to use that Cunliffe argument, he was good at that too, in the sense of saying, well, he kind of exploited everybody's sense of it, that everybody sensed we're getting ripped off here. We're being taken for mugs with what we're paying for our phone bills. Mm. And I think when you look at all the conversations we had and the one we had just now about supermarkets, it's how everybody feels about the supermarket deal too. So electorally, it would not necessarily be too challenging, I think, to get bold and say, right, we're going to bust things up and see if that helps. And look, it may not help as much as we would hope, but for those other reasons I was talking about, the way things cost you. Because, look, if you want a real left-field idea, and I tried it out earlier this year on my Substack, and my loyal readers who mostly like what I have to say said, what are you being spoken, Dave? Because I was saying, how about we look at, you know, going to progressively and running the infrastructure to go to scale up with it to a population of 10 million and then 15 million, because we've got this huge problem where we rattle around and it becomes hard for businesses to find that kind of weight of customer numbers that means they can confidently and energetically go about their business. And, you know, if we were that much larger, the proportionate cost of freighting stuff here might perhaps become less significant. Or we, if we were that much bigger, we might be doing more economic activity here ourselves, making more of these things ourselves, assembling more of those things ourselves, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
A little bit more Australian. Something to think about, but, you know, again, people, your listeners may now text and say, what's that prick been smoking? I don't know.
But I think it is worth considering, because we tend to be a country that's always about 10 steps behind, you know, where we need to be. And that kind of population growth, it's not off the cards, you know?
No. And especially when you think of the huge pressure we're getting from climate change and temperature rise, the whole equatorial belt is getting, it's getting tougher to live there already, and that's only going to amplify in the next 10 and 20 and 30 years, and you're going to have huge numbers on the move, many more than you have already, and we can be a home for more people. We could be a good home for more people if we do the infrastructure planning for it, because, you know, we had a big surge of almost a million in the late years of the Key government, and they happily took the advantage of the economic growth that they gave, but they did sweep far all for providing the extra infrastructure in terms of houses and roads and pipes and all of that boring stuff that you need to accommodate an extra million people. But if you do that, you're actually providing jobs and economic activity. You just plan for it, and it becomes this happy circle. You'll know from the notes I sent you that I was only going to be talking about supermarkets, but here we are riffing about some other stuff, and it's really saying, well,
I think it's a kind of snapshot of a broader image, like the supermarket situation, with how much we're paying for food and, you know, the kind of uselessness of the current situation.
And it's crazy when you consider the possibilities we've got to make things go better. Energy is another dimension of this, you know.
Oh, I know.
The potential we have for offshore wind, they call people in this industry call us the Saudi Arabia of wind, because, you know, we're in the roaring 40s. You know, if you were to put turbines in the seabed off this coast, you would just, you would be inundated with energy. And let's step that out a little bit. If you had a whole lot more of that, and you had all of those people coming here and all of that extra economic activity, you know, all economic activity requires energy. And if you can have an abundance of energy being produced here that's sustainable, that's not, that's, you know, has a no carbon footprint. That's good for us. It's good for the world. I mean, what's not to love?
Indeed. I'd love to go on about this, but we do have to let you go because we've got to get into some ads and then the news. But thank you so much, David.
Thanks,
I always
David.
Love to chat to you.
Terrific. We'll talk again soon.
Let's have a great
week. Bust up the supermarkets.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.